On this week's episode of That Sound Podcast, we have some very talented local musicians.
Today we have Chris Carney and Brendan Rayburn, aka Ribsy.
Chris and Ribsy are no stranger to the music circuit and have worked on some very exciting projects, both cover and original material. Currently, they are working on a project called When Ireland Rocked with the legendary guitarist Pat McManus.
Yeah, and Cormac Neeson of The Answer. Very, very good stuff. I hope you enjoy the interview, conversation. Check this one out.
Strap yourselves in. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Welcome to That Sound Podcast. It's your host, Luke Cassidy, and beside me is your other host, Gavin Malone. Today, we have the talented Chris Carney and
Brendan Rayburn, a.k.a. Ribsy.
Ribsy.
How's things, boys?
It's good.
Yeah. Welcome to That Sound Podcast.
Thanks for having us, lads.
Oh, no. Thank you for coming.
Appreciate you giving up your time, lads. I know you are very busy.
It's good to be here.
You're after a hell of a show there in Drogheda, I heard. We missed it, unfortunately, but we'll definitely make the next one, that's for sure.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. Great
night. We had a very... I don't know if we could have asked for it to go better. We had a full house. Me pants didn't fall down during the gig. Great reaction from the crowd. Didn't dislocate the shoulder, as I had done in McHugh's before at a gig. But it went...
Went well. It went well. A lot of nervous energy about, as you would have on a launch night.
Yeah.
And but no, as Chris said, couldn't have went much better.
Yeah. You know?
It was a guitar fest. Yeah, no, like from my point of view, I hadn't been in an environment like that in about 20 years, to be in that kind of set.
Yeah,
those kind of tunes.
And you were among some greats.
We were. We've been very lucky there. And through Brendan's connections, Brendan knew Pat McManus and Pat knew Cormac Neeson. And you know Pat a long time, don't you, Brendan?
I do know Pat a long time now. Yeah, he actually. Himself and his wife Sally were chatting to myself and Chris over the course of the day, and I think they were saying they had moved back from London 20 years ago or in and around that, and that's when we met Pat first, you know.
Okay.
And met him. I was very much aware of him.
Like he's one of Ireland's best.
He is definitely one of the last in line of greats. You know, you should be proud of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he definitely has that position.
He has a very down-to-earth manner of himself as well. Like, he carries himself well. For what that man has done, he should be, you know, skipping up the road. But he seems very settled. Yeah. And he seems very content on stage. And you can just tell he loves what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. He can't nearly help himself, I think, once he puts the guitar or the fiddle on him.
Yeah.
But I think his personality is his biggest.
Yeah, definitely.
So relatable, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
Well-reared sort of a
lad.
Yeah. He's an absolute gentleman.
Absolute gentleman. No, cheers.
And he's time for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
There's no, from my experience, there's no stage face with him and then private face with him.
Yeah.
He is Pat all the time. But one thing I did learn on the day of the gig, on the night of the gig, the whole day was you could not separate that man from his guitar. Him and the guitar are one.
Right.
So if we'd a bit of downtime during the day, one of us might have been running out for a smoke, another might be on the phone, Pat's sitting on the chair, just playing guitar.
Just playing nonstop.
Playing nonstop. He was playing nonstop up until we got the call to go on stage, like, you know.
Very good. Well, we'll get back to that in a little bit. Again, you have a lot of different projects going. You have Light Years, you're both in that, the Pearl Jam tribute band. I've seen you numerous times, and to be honest, it is the closest thing you will get to the real thing.
Thanks very much.
The last time I seen you was up in Dublin, up at the top of Grafton Street. What was that venue called?
The Well.
That was the last time we were in Dublin. Nigel wasn't 100%, wasn't that right? Yeah.
No, it's fair play to him. He had lost his voice the night before.
Yeah.
And Yeah, just it was touch and go, but he always tugs out delivers the goods.
The sound in that venue, I thought, was amazing.
Was it? Yeah,
I found it. It was me and my wife was at, and we were just kind of sitting chilling. And I swear, I thought because it's lower or something, and the balcony above it, I thought the sound that night was epic.
That's great to hear because, like, I've no idea, obviously, because I was on the stage.
Yeah,
but. You know, just the look of the place, a lot of reflective surfaces and that.
Yeah, it's a good venue.
I was anticipating, you know, not the best sound, but to hear it was a good sound because we're going back there.
The sound in the well is very good. I had the pleasure of seeing Brian Downey's Alive and Dangerous time last year.
Great.
Last May, actually. And it was unbelievable. Yeah. I actually couldn't get over it.
Yeah.
But I haven't had the pleasure yet to see Lightyear. But I'm very much looking forward to the gig in the Spirit Store.
Us too.
All of you, Lightyear will be playing in the Spirit Store. When is it, boys?
Lightyear is the 24th of May. Friday the 24th of May.
I swear to God, the human calendar.
And the Saturday at Rockathon.
Rockathon on the Saturday, yeah. And then we're in Belfast Empire on the Sunday.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Nice.
It's a bank holiday, of course, up the north, so don't be shy.
Anticipating a good crowd.
Yeah. Check them out. I swear to God, you will not be disappointed if you are.
Spirit Store is a fantastic venue.
Very good
great
venue.
Great to have such a place locally.
Yeah.
And Empire is a great rock and roll venue in Belfast. So
Yeah, we were up there too, actually. Yeah. And then you also have the Beyond the U2 tribute.
Beyond the Music, that's another myself and Chris.
Chris, yeah.
And it's an idea myself and Nigel had, who you're referencing earlier on. We've been working together on loads of projects. We've a good old team assembled, you know, and it's Beyond the Music is a concept to... It is a U2, it's the Joshua Tree at the minute, but it will move on to something else then.
Okay.
It's not a U2 project.
Okay.
The concept is to take a piece of work or an artist or an album.
Oh.
And you know, Beyond the Music is what we do. So we look at the piece of work and investigate what it's discussing or what's the vibe with it. And then we use orchestra to bring out the deeper themes and thoughts of the songs.
I watched some of the videos from, I think it was Germany, and with the orchestra and the stage and the lighting and the setup, it's a professional job.
Thanks for saying that, Gavin. But it's a big deal now. You know it is, and it's a lot of work goes into it. And it's great.
You can tell, though.
It's great to see us getting to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Because it was years in the making.
And any clues to what the next project might be?
I'd say we'll give the boys an exclusive here today. You know, Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. No, go on, Brandon.
I don't know if we can commit to just exactly saying much yet.
Fair enough. But I seen you starting to sweat.
No. But we definitely have started
practicing and
gearing towards what we're going to be doing next. But look, might be in a position to reveal that.
Okay.
Announcing your plans is a surefire way to make the devil smile.
Exactly,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
For all the bits of adversity to come your way.
That sort of thing. But like, I only came in later on as maybe a result of the pandemic. But the boys, Brandon and Nigel, as he said, they had been working on it for years. And they were all set to go on their first tour. And then the pandemic came in. So it was on the shelf for another few years.
Yeah.
So maybe if the pandemic hadn't happened, Beyond the Music might be on to that next stage by now. But I think the goal is to have you two, Weird Al Yankovic or whoever, you know, and then maybe 10 years down the road, please God, if someone in some country wants the U2 thing, well, we can dust that back off.
Yeah.
But they're an enormous fun. And from the point of view of a guy who, like, The Edge was a big influence on me when I started out playing guitar, Oh, sure, it's a dream gig.
Yeah. You can tell by looking at the videos that yous are all buzzing, like, yous are all buzzing off each other.
It's really cool, and there's not a bit of alcohol driving that on or
anything. Not until afterwards now.
But that's all just the passion of playing on a good show with a good team.
Cool. So let's just reverse a little bit for a minute. I want to just ask you briefly, what is your first memory of music growing up?
First memory of music growing up. God. Like, I'm a lot older than you, fine gentlemen, so I'm just trying to...
You're like a cognac.
A lot. You know. Probably would be Top of the Pops based.
Okay.
Actually, my first memory of remembering seeing something on Top of the Pops, I don't know. I'm thinking even, I can remember Johnny Logan winning the Eurovision. I think that was 1980, though. I probably remember seeing, I don't like Mondays on Top of the Pops, maybe seeing that video or something like that, going, what? Fuck.
Yeah.
What's happened to me?
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
Do you know, something like that. I don't really know, but something like that. Top of the Pops, of course, was a great platform to see and hear music, you know. Mm. When I was a kid, it was like a weekly gather around the telly, you know.
Yeah.
And you'd be aware of what was in the charts, and it meant something at the time.
Yeah. You might see some artists too that maybe you mightn't hear on the radio as well. You might
get,
you know.
Or someone you weren't even planning on listening to, because of the variety aspect of something like Top of the Pops. It opened up your tastes, opened up your horizons with what you might listen to, get you out of your box.
Well, I suppose, you know, though, my parents' music taste, in our house was Beatles and Elvis Presley, Neil Diamond.
Yeah, not a bad mix.
Same with in our house, Neil Diamond was a huge thing. My mother.
I love them all still, you know.
Yeah.
So music's very, very, it's an emotion anyway, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So it'll bring you back to a time when you hear songs.
Yeah.
I reckon that music is the closest thing we have in real life to a time machine. Because you might hear something and it triggers, never mind a memory, a feeling that you haven't felt in a long time.
It's all like about therapy the as well, man. Like, I don't know, you know, when you're in a shitty mood or something and you wanna just vent, man, you bang on an album, it could just chill you out. Like, music is so powerful,
Serious vehicle,
I think we take it for granted and don't quite realise the power of it.
And I noticed my wife would be laughing at me, whatever it is about live orchestras, it does something to me, man.
That's some power, powerful sound, you know.
I was supposed to go to Hans Zimmer, and I've been watching his stuff, man. You know that one from Inception?
Yeah, Time.
Incredible.
Dude,
he finishes the shows with that. I went to two of the... went to Monier and then the following year.
I have like tears in my eyes listening to that.
Sure, that's it.
Yeah. It's so powerful.
That's as raw as it gets, isn't
if you get a chance next time, go. And if I get a chance next time, I'll go again.
He's a genius.
I haven't got to see him, but I would love to go to that.
So but he fills his band with the quality.
The best in the world.
He had, at the gigs I seen him on, he had Guthrie Govan.
No way.
Unreal. He had Mike Einzinger from Incubus.
Yeah.
And he had Johnny Marr. And then had a fourth guy.
I've seen Johnny Marr,
I was going to say a shit hot guy. Some fourth guy, I didn't know his name, but he'd play anything and everything. And that was just his guitar section. He had Yolanda Charles on bass, so he did. Anyway, the Hans show, I'm not here to promote Hans, but go to it.
Go see it. There is a brave power in orchestra behind music.
Yeah.
Mm. And that one of my first experiences would have been the Metallica S&M album.
Yeah.
And that would have been my first introduction to Metallica. And to this day, they're still my favourite band.
Great,
Although I love all their other music and everything about it, I still come back to that album. And there's still something about it that will bring you back to that first experience.
Yeah, like you say, Chris, there's something funny. I want to get to you first, though. Your first memory.
First memory, I was thinking about it there. And Sure, it goes back to, you know, I grew up in the house. The mother was still living at home with two sisters, so there was a lot of 80s pop in the house, you know. So I guess you're talking about the likes of hearing Whitney Houston. Now, whether you talk to it then or not, but they are my earliest. And then, can't remember, but they had an album for me. I don't know, was it Percy and the Pigs or something like that?
Right.
They did a cover of Yellow Submarine in a high-pitched tone, you know. But
when it stuck with you.
It stuck with me, and the pop thing, big time, stuck with me. So when I started having my own choice, as in, right, I'm 10 or 11 now, music's the thing, what do I like? Like, at that time, you know, Lisa Loeb's Day was coming out as a single, and lots of really good pop like that at the time. I was a late bloomer.
And well-produced music.
Well-produced music, well-written music, you know.
Incredible session musicians back then on all of those tracks.
Yeah.
Even earlier was even better session musicians, I think.
Yeah. Oh,
some of the blues stuff, American, that one.
Oh, but when you consider the Hit Factory and the Wrecking Crew and all these, like, there's Toto. We all know Toto as a band.
Yeah.
But they played on most of the stuff you will listen to from the set, not most of the stuff, but they were serious session heads.
Yeah, like Jeff Porcaro was one of the go-to guys. Steve Lukather playing on a lot of stuff as well.
Yeah, Steve Lukather was the... We all know Eddie Van Halen did the guitar solo in Michael Jackson's Beat It in one take. But Steve Lukather did the riff and all the other rhythm parts and that, you know. And then, would you be familiar with a song from Michael McDonald? The name of it, We're Not In Love Anymore. I keep forgetting We're Not In Love Anymore, right?
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with that,
Jeff Porcaro played the
Warren
drums
G sampled it into Regulate.
Oh, right.
Right, yeah. And Jeff Porcaro played drums, Steve Lukather played the clean. So these boys all played around. And I'm not a big Toto head. I'd name five songs off you. But I really feckin' appreciate.
Yeah, like there is so many of them musicians that just don't get the recognition that they deserve, you know?
No. And at the time, like Steve Lukather, if you'd hear him in a podcast, that maybe if they had a better manager or agent, they'd be living in even bigger houses now, like, you know.
It's all about the right moment at the right time, isn't it?
Mm.
What about Luke? What was your first memory of music?
My first memory of music would have been, I'd say, listening to some of the radio stations. I had some older cousins who I'm very fortunate for, who had got gifted some instruments for Christmas. So they wanted to learn how to play guitar and drums and bass, and they had a full setup. They had guitar, drums, bass, mic. And that was back when there was a heavy metal scene around locally. So you're probably talking the early 2000s. I would have been only 4, 5, 6. My father was infatuated with Iron Maiden, Metallica, that new wave of British heavy metal in the early 80s was his thing. So when we would go over to their house, I just became enthralled and all of this that was going on. I thought it was absolutely incredible.
Fireworks going off in your
head. I wanted to become a part of this. And I think probably looking up to the older cousins as well, thinking they want my part in this, or let me play. And I remember they were about 15 and 16. So when Metallica came to the RDS in 2003, you were at that gig, Gavin.
First gig, yeah,
and they weren't of age to go on their own. So my father was summoned to take them. So he then bought the S&M album, and that was bumped in the car like morning, noon and night. I had a CD player in my room. So then any of those pop music the albums that I had were quickly thrown to the wayside, and it became Metallica.
Black became the colour.
Black became the colour, and it was very much like it was a tight playlist. Like disc one got skipped over very much, not now, but it was like Sandman, One, Battery, Sad But True, and Nothing Else Matters, really. So they were like just on repeat all the time, over and over. And that was really my first memory of music.
My first memory of music is involving somebody in the room here today, is Brendan. I just had to look up during the week when actually the single dropped, was Let's Get Rocked by Def Leppard. And it was 92. And I was born in 86, so I was 6. And Brendan Ribsey used to hang around with my next door neighbour.
Still do.
Good old rockers. Used to be teenagers at that stage. and me and my neighbour into the sitting room, and I can still picture it today. Let's Get Rocked on big massive speakers, absolutely blowing the house out of it. And me head banging away going, what is this? I love it.
Yeah.
And from there it went to from Def Leppard to Metallica to Pearl Jam to Iron Maiden. I remember the first time I heard Hallow Be Thy Name, I think Robbie and that you know that being you know the church bell,
yeah.
That bell, man, I have that memory, like that sound, that sound of that just stays with me.
Resonates. Every time you hear the bell ringing in St. Mary's Church in Ardy,
Hallow
Be Thy Name.
You're waiting for Bruce Dickinson to come in.
And then we used to go down. A good memory of going to see you guys down when you was Ribsio with the Cunning Stunts.
Yeah.
And Nigel was drumming at the time.
Drumming and singing, yeah.
And he sang that, and I used to drive him mad. You used to play it on St. Stephen's Day in Ardy.
That's right.
I used to tell him, you have to hold a note, you have to hold a note, you have to hold it.
I can imagine what Nigel was telling you have to do.
And he would do it. And he'd look at me like,
no better man.
And drumming it.
Mm. And we would have done that. Now, I wasn't in the band at the time, but would have done that song even a bit faster than the record, like, you know?
Yeah, man, that was the highlight of Christmas. It was yes, Cunning Stunts and R.D. Deadly.
Those gigs were great, like the boys when they came on the scene.
It was tight quarters down there, but man, he's made it work.
They were the gigs. Where were you thinking now? Farrell's upstairs or something? No,
in Indigo.
Indigo, Indigo.
They're absolutely fabulous memories to have of the first experience.
Oh, jeez, any of that stuff.
I'm actually doing someone a disservice here. And not that he'd mind or might even hear this, but my uncle Paddy Bradley was a huge influence very early on. He had a band himself. He was in a band himself. They even got into television and all that. But so from early, Paddy was living in the house while I was there with the aunties, and my first exposure to guitars and the likes of that was through Paddy, you know. So I don't know if I'd be the same musically speaking if Paddy hadn't been in my life. I owe a lot to him there, so I do.
Yeah.
It's mad how things make it all fall into place, you know. Like, if I didn't live next door to Jimmy and Robbie, like, and Robbie had a mad taste in music.
Yeah.
Robbie liked, I remember Robbie, he'd like Garth Brooks, and then he'd like Down.
He just loved music.
He'd put on Stomp 442 from Anthrax, right?
Yeah.
Do you like that, Carney? I do, Robbie, yeah, I do. Wait till you hear the next hour. All right, Robbie, right, what are you throwing on? Melissa Etheridge.
Yeah, crazy.
But the variety is the spice of life, especially with music.
I was talking to him not too long ago, and he was telling me about some band from Czech Republic he likes. So I was like, holy Jesus Christ.
He's still hungry for it, though, you know?
Yeah.
Going on that,
were you making an Eastern European pun there?
I wasn't actually, but I'll pretend like I was.
Okay, sorry.
Off the back of the variety being the spice of life and music, for sure, is there anything or any advice that you could give to younger musicians to listen to more music? That's one thing I find has helped me massively, is listening to a lot of other musicians outside of that one genre that you're interested in.
Well, don't dismiss any music. I mean, all music is good. You know, when you learn rhythms and melodies and harmonies, you know, any form of music that will use those tones or like, I'm even thinking, I don't know much about electronic music, but I'm sure there's plenty to be taken from it too. Like, all music is good.
Yeah.
It's still doing something for somebody, somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something to be learned from it.
Something
from
to everything. Be taken
don't,
out of
don't
it.
Don't throw your nose at any, just because, like, even, isn't it, some of the grunge stuff came from, was it the drumming fills that Dave Grohl got was from...
He talked about a lot of the 70s Motown stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Motown. Gap Band.
Okay. That's where he got a lot of the fills for Nevermind, wasn't it?
Yeah, and even Travis Barker has said that he had listened to some certain Latin rhythms and stuff that he would have learned as a kid.
He's a powerhouse.
And then he sped them up, bits and pieces like that. And that's what came.
Yeah,
I mean, if you want to be as complete as you can possibly be, you have to be open-minded and aware of you know, the wheel's not getting reinvented. It's all there already somewhere, like, you know.
Yeah, you can put your own twist on it too, you'll always find inspiration.
But you need the information to on board to regurgitate it out in whatever way you can then.
You couldn't have said it better. Or
knowledge
to be
is
honest.
Power, like anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, aside from that, can you remember what your first album was that you bought or that you listened to?
First album that I bought? I'd say the first cassette tape that was probably given to me that I didn't buy was probably just might have been Born in the USA, I'd say.
Oh, man.
And I tell you the first tape we ever got in the house that's just sort of going, jeez, this is my own tape here, was probably Now That's What I Call Music.
Oh, they were great.
The very first one. Yeah.
First one, right.
So Now That's What I Call Music.
Yeah.
I think there was four cassettes in it.
Wow. Just the size of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember the big double ones?
Double. There was four tapes in it.
You could have knocked someone out throwing it
out. Like a brick.
Aye. And that was, she does great songs on it, you know.
Yeah.
But there were all
a big variety too on that. There'd always be
a
bit of dance, a bit of,
and it might have been an opportunity to get hearing some music that you mightn't have been that aware of, maybe, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
That was probably 82 or 3, I think. 83, I think.
Right, the first Now.
I think so.
Right. Like, if you were to offer advice to young people, I'd split that into two. If they want to be a musician or just for listening to music, okay? So just for listening to music, yeah, ideally, listen to everything. But we all know the world kind of doesn't work like that. You do get magnetised to certain genres or that.
Yeah.
So listen to whatever makes you happy. Yeah. And, you know, if you want to class something else as toilet filler or whatever, sure, that's your own prerogative or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're someone starting out with aspirations to either write music or perform music, listen. And train your ears. And it's you don't have to put your ear through a training course. The more you listen to it and expose yourself, that is the key there.
You'll find your genre then.
Yeah, you'll find your genre. We all have our favourite genres.
Yeah.
But, you know, never mind these or how fast you can play and know how written. These are the biggest assets for a musician. Your ears are the biggest assets, without question.
Very good. Do you remember what album you got?
I was lucky with my dad, Paul Carney, because he had the rock thing sorted. So when I did come round to the rock thing, he had the 70s and 80s there, right? I think the first album I actually consciously bought myself was Jagged Little Pill, Alanis Morissette.
Oh,
which,
man.
There's not one bad track on it. So that's like, I was born in 83. I think that was released in 95. So
such a powerful voice, hasn't you?
Unreal. Yeah. And then, like, so while I was buying that album, around about those years, it could have been 94, I was taken to my first gig. Oh. So what was my first gig?
I think you told me this before. Michael Jackson?
I wish. It was Garth Brooks.
Okay.
Now, whatever, but it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was an eye-opener, and that stayed with me a lot. I don't listen to him now. Like, I wouldn't put it on at home, mightn't think of it. But I do the odd gig with a Garth Brooks tribute band.
All right.
So sitting down, going over the set is no problem to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are in there from a long time ago.
And he's a great showman. Like, and that was something where we were going to fall into then, was like, you know, what influenced your style or your direction of music? Like, you know, listening to music, or, you know, what paved the way to get you to, like, the different bands that you've been in over the years, both of you, you've been in a lot of bands.
Yeah, well, we're still looking for someone to hold on to us. Like, you know, we're just tough guys to work with. So.
No, you're together a long time, in fairness.
Together a long time, and more recently, in recent years, got maybe closer in a working capacity, like, you know. And we've had When Ireland Rocked come to fruition now. That's still at the beginning of a journey.
Yeah.
You know, but already the wheels are turning for future projects that, before maybe we did When Ireland Rocked, or before Brendan and Nigel undertook Beyond the Music, these would have been just pipe dreams. But now we can actually see real roads and the work involved and how to do it in making that happen. So
it's not like, when you're listening to music, as Chris rightly put out there, but the, your ears. But also, if you're involved in doing gigs or at any level, the principles of it doesn't really change as you aspire to do other things. You need a good work ethic.
Yeah.
And you need to be involved with people you trust and be acutely aware, no matter what you plan to do, something's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And then they're intense enough situations to deal with sometimes, but you have to, you know, you can, like anything else in life, you can be a passenger or you can be taking in what's happening.
Yeah.
And like we said earlier, it's all information you can take on board, whatever it is. So if like an air scenario and you're, like you're mentioning, thanks for mentioning, you watch the Beyond the Music stuff on
YouTube,
wherever you've seen it, and you're sort of thinking, jeez, that's... But like that, you don't just one day wake up and go, jeez, you know what we'll do?
It's a process.
Yeah, you have to know how to put that together, and you have to be aware how that, all the moving parts and all that stuff. So it's stuff you can attain. It's information you can attain and absorb and make account of or not.
Yeah.
On your own journey. And you need to be very conscious to what you're doing along the way if you want to
get
do something with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's nothing got to do with do something with it or you know.
But to make it constantly progress.
Well, if that's what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
If that's what your the born and ambition inside you is to
climb.
Be creative and just even, you know.
Like better yourself every time, though.
Yeah, but like it can be done, but you need to know how to do it. You need to be willing to work hard.
And would you have much of a team behind you? We'll say when you're on the likes of that on the road, with we'll say Beyond the Music. Like, you know, you're saying you need the right work ethic, and but like how much of apart from playing do you do
on those shows?
Yeah.
Well,
you're looking at the team behind the team there.
Yeah, I was thinking that, and I just wanted to delve into that. Like, there's so much to musicians that you saw going on stage performing, but
that's a fraction of the gig these days, because everyone these days everyone has to be not has to be, but to give yourself the best chance, you have to be someone who produces content or knows how to promote yourself. And we're living in a good age in a way that 20 years ago and longer ago, you had to not sit around, but you had to get noticed by an A&R man from a record company or something. But there's people making original careers from their bedroom now, introducing it from their bedroom upward, like, and you're blessed in that sort of way. But yeah, playing is the breather between all the other work.
And that becomes the easy part these days, Chris, is actually playing.
Yeah, and the enjoyable part, whereas before the be all and end all was playing. Like I have a gig this Friday night. It's only a wedding. It's a band I haven't played with before, and it's important for me to know how to play all the songs. But in this environment, it's just as important for me to be there at the time the boys tell me to be there at, and to look the same as the boys. So the music is important, right? And the quality of musicians important, but a saying I've heard from different nationalities now, from a conductor of a Polish orchestra to the likes of Nigel. I'm not quoting Nigel here, but people we know, is that it doesn't really matter the talent. It does, like if you're Steve Vai or something, but the attitude is as important, if not more, because you have to be able to ask yourself in a touring environment, can I actually live with this person for 3 or 4 weeks? We all love the stories of Keith Richards throwing the television outside,
Charlie Watts, and all that.
But in our world, that's not necessary. And if you do that, well, you're not Keith Richards. You're not going to get away with it.
For sure.
But that's going back to Pat McManus and that. Like, just stay grounded.
Stay grounded. Don't take it seriously. to get the work done. But don't take yourself too seriously.
Don't let your ego get bigger.
Take the craft seriously.
It's a weakness, you know. It's a weakness of personality at that stage. Anyway, it's nothing got to do with musicianship, you know.
For sure. That's a very good statement, for sure. Yeah.
So it's like anything. You need a good team and people that know their job, you know, and are able to do it. And then show up on time and roll up the sleeves.
Can either of you recall the first gig that you played or where it was?
Yep.
The wheel's spinning, Brendan. The wheel is
spinning. Well, you know, there was. I can remember the very first gig I did. This might have been in Geezer Shed, if you're watching there, Geezer. I don't even know if I could actually play it at the time. And there was about one, maybe two people at it. And then that was original music.
Original
heavy,
music?
Heavy, heavy stuff.
Is that Semblance, is it?
No. Then we had a band called Semblance in RD. That was like a school band from the community school. And that was at Mousy. Gary?
Yes.
And Nigel McCardle. And Andrew was playing the guitar as well, and Hack was playing the guitar at some stage there. Jason McNeice was a singer at one stage.
Jason.
Barry Owens was singing then at another stage. And we did a gig, I think we did a gig in Kilsaren, might have been our first ever gig in the hall there.
So you were doing original music at this age?
Then we were doing covers as well.
Okay.
And then we did a gig in the Rock Garden. Then we were still at school, which is now Eamon Dorans. Well, I don't know if it's that now. Is it not even Eamon Dorans anymore?
Something is now Eamon Dorans. I think Eamon Dorans went a while ago.
Yeah, something else then. But so we were still at school doing that, and that, you know, I suppose that was early 90s, so the metal and stuff was quite more relevant than it. Well, yeah. I don't mean more relevant, but it was.
It was in its prime, it was fresh.
It probably was, you know.
Yeah.
And grunge was just happening and all that.
Yeah.
So, and we were just learning what we were doing, you know. But there was plenty of lads doing it as well. Everyone was, you know, it might be harder for younger kids now. I don't know if as many young boys and girls are playing.
You're busy.
Yeah, like I teach.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be a lack of, what should I say, networking or jamming among kids, which is actually ironic in a sense, considering social media is so accessible. But I do teach in a couple of schools where there seems to be good infrastructure and lads and lassies play at lunch, which is great, you know, and there's music there for them, there's instruments there for them, which I think is fabulous. It's not something I had.
That's a major, serious advancement. There probably wasn't that in my time at school, but there was kids interested in playing music. On their own
accord or on their own level, their own genre.
Maybe it wasn't in front of them, but like I know RD, Carrick Macross, Cassiblaney, Kells, Drogheda, you know, the sort of local area where we are, you'd, growing up, you'd always be aware of such a lad that was
a great guitar player.
That young one's a great singer. My own kids, I have kids of my own, they're 20 years of age now, and I'm not aware of many of them that's playing music.
Yeah.
Now, maybe there are, but handfuls.
Yeah, it doesn't seem
I'm sure there's loads.
I definitely feel there would have been more of a scene from what I hear.
Maybe young bands, I'm not aware of as much.
Yeah.
I'm sure
individual
there is young
musicians, maybe more so.
Yeah, but in regards to, as we'd say, original music.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's the venues. So you got to say a huge shout out and a big thanks to McHugh's and Drogheda that they are always willing to support local musicians.
Yeah.
And original musicians. The Spirit Store as well. been fortunate to play in both of those venues with the project I've been playing with recently, Bedside Community. And it's just fabulous to get that support.
And a platform to...
To showcase your music. To bring it outside of the rehearsal studio.
Yeah.
I think back in the day as well, you know, 90s and early noughties, like, of course, the social scene, the pub scene has changed so much since those days.
Hugely.
So back in the day in RD, in our small town, three or four pubs might have live music three or four nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So the likes of, like, my first paying gig was on a Wednesday night in the Castle Inn in RD.
Wednesday night.
On a Wednesday night. And you know, where we all of age, it was Tenderhooks.
Tenderhooks.
Now, my first gig was many a year before that, but the first time I got...
Proper.
Not proper. Money, okay? Money. Not proper. Nothing proper about it.
I can do this. Let's do this for a living.
You know, we can get a few quid in the hand. No, the living thing came a lot later, but I'm just saying there was more...
Couldn't he get fish the money anyway? He'd find it somewhere.
Oh, couldn't you get it? Yeah. Good old Stephen Cunningham. But you had pub owners who had live music and they would take a chance on the young band, especially when they seen the young band...
Fairness to John Joe, he always did.
He always did. And... we also had the Lemon and Clove in RD.
Yeah.
Veronica, you know, that was the laugh. One week, us and Tenderhooks. One weekend, we'd be in the Clove. The next weekend, we'd be in the Castle Inn.
I'd be fighting all usual with us.
Not even fighting. No one minded as such because there was enough bread, enough people in the town to fill these pubs on the nights they needed, like, you know.
Well, like, I that was your first key. I remember growing up, my granny was not too far from your house. Like, I never got into playing music. I played a very small bit of bass when I got older. But I remember when we were younger up in the Bray and we'd be out kicking footballs. And you know, all you'd hear was the rattle at the back of Shane McNeese's house.
Yeah.
And
the garage days in Shane's garage.
That was it. Yous were from the get go music. You, Connie, you know, Shane McNeese.
Angus was in there.
Angus.
Right, okay, by the time I picked up a stringed instrument, right, I was already doing piano lessons. I was in school band and RD concert band, okay? I hadn't actually got my sights set on a guitar or anything. And then I was in first year in a community school and a band who were formed in the school, like they were in fifth or sixth year at the time, were playing a concert in the gym and we all went in to sit down on a break to watch them. And Andrew Cunningham was in my class. And the two of us were just sitting beside each other, and Andrew started telling me, "Yeah, we've a band. We practice up in Chalky's there, Paul Clark.
Right,
we need a bass player. Do you want to come along?" "Oh yeah, sure. But one problem, I don't play bass or anything like that. Come on up and we'll see." So I'm 11 or 12 at this stage, and I went up, be it that evening or the next one. And what was the bass, the song? Considering the 90s, what was the song that made a fella who never touched a bass guitar realise,
AC/DC?
No, not AC/DC, a 90s band.
Nirvana.
Yeah.
Smells like Teen Spirit.
Four notes.
Simple.
Yeah.
And simple.
People like him playing
that. Yeah. but from then on, and then that band Dry Ice, we broke up.
Dry Ice.
Me, Paul Clark, Chalky, and the two Cunnies.
Yeah.
And we had some good gigs, good talent competitions. Stephen wrote original songs. We were playing them as well. But maybe only for that conversation that day, you know, I might have went a different way.
Yeah.
Might actually be good on the trombone now or something like that. Or on the piano.
The L triangle.
Ribsy, who taught you how to play the bass, or did you teach yourself, or how did that come about?
No, I tell you, I never got lessons as such, but I remember Toaster, David Mohan, who was in Red Alert, and he's been in loads of bands since, but he definitely showed me the notes in the neck, and maybe I think that the major, not even a major, the rock and roll sort of in a major shape, and away you go.
The 20 major shape.
Yeah.
10 major if you're lucky.
Exactly. Yeah.
Didn't even have to buy the full box them days.
Three majors there, please.
Yeah, very
But, good. And then that was it. But, like, that Do you know, that was it. I was hungry to get stuck into it.
Yeah.
Never really learned music properly. Now, that's what I will say. It's a regret.
Yeah.
But well, as Chris says, you leave the ears on you to endeavour to find your way.
It doesn't seem to be much of an obstacle for you.
Mm.
Look, there are some absolutely fabulous musicians who aren't gifted with the theory side of it.
Yeah.
And they can really make things work.
Most of the musicians never got lessons.
Oh, that, yeah, or, you know, don't know their majors or minors. A lot of it is, it can be what sounds good to my ear.
Yeah.
You know? Like, musical theory, brilliant. If a kid has time or anyone in life has time, go in there and do a bit of that there. But you don't.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
But even, you see new musicians now, like Mario Duplantier, they're redeveloping music now. The drummer for Gojira, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, they're a French
metal band.
Like, he is probably top two drummers in the world.
He's one of the top guys out there at the minute. He's fucking phenomenal.
Okay.
It's incredible.
But he's redeveloped, he discovered.
He has definitely brought, what should I say, a new element to the playing. He's taken all of his influences, put them in a mixing pot, took some more of himself in, and then he's just found his way. Like you had said earlier, Ribsy, in the podcast, when you listen to all of those influences and you take in that knowledge, and then you're fit to remodel it in whatever way you want, which is incredible. Like what Mario has done is just outrageous. You should check out some of his solos on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. He's endorsed by Tama. So he's done some promo shoots for solos. He's done some solos for some of their new drums recently, and it's just, it's mind-boggling stuff.
We got to see them up in Belfast.
We got to see them in the Waterfront Hall last February. And for guys who
are... Ulster Hall, wasn't it?
Was it the Ulster Hall?
Yeah, it was like 2,000 people. Nuts.
And, like, these guys have packed out festivals of 100,000 plus.
If I'm not wrong, Gojira are on the go a long time, aren't they?
I think the Guts are 20 years, if not a wee bit more.
They've jumped in the last album, I think, last two albums.
I think since Magma came out in 2017 or 18, post or pre-pandemic anyway.
South America are huge.
Yeah.
But South American fans are nuts.
Yeah, Sepultura, are they
Brazilian?
South American?
Brazilian,
metal is nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
even
nearly
Metallica,
like the homeland of it.
Mexico,
so Rock and Rio, huge gigs.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Some of those Iron Maiden Rock and Rios from, I think, 2001 is a memorable one. They had a live album of that, for Fear of the Dark.
But even like Bogota in Colombia and that, they know their music, man. They love it.
They absolutely love heavy music.
The Foos were there to do a huge gig. That's where Taylor Hawkins
was. That was Colombia. God rest Taylor.
Jeez, what a talent. And talking about musicians who played on stuff, like he was a big session drummer before he got in with the Foos,
wasn't it?
Yeah, you'd Alanis Morissette.
I think Jagged Little Pill was mostly programmed drums, but then her live drummer for the tour, because she toured the shit out of that, was Taylor Hawkins, I believe.
Yeah.
A fabulous musician, an absolute incredible
drummer. Never mind the drums.
Yeah.
Could sing really well.
Could play guitar really well.
That was oh my God, who's dead? What?
Yeah.
That was really
I've only got
then.
That twice in my life so far, thank God. It was Chris Cornell.
Ah.
That stung, man. That stung.
That was a kick. Look, we went through a phase there for a few years where we lost a lot of them before their time, even if there was
Chester Bennington
a few months after Chris. Then we'd Prince go.
Dave Bowie. Yeah, there was a lot actually went. I got the privilege to see Chris Cornell in New York in a venue. I don't think there was more than 1,500 people there.
Lovely.
Acoustic set. Him on the stage, just him and a guitar. It was like a cinema or something. Just couches chilling out. His kids were on the stage and his wife and that. And he was just... It was probably the best gig I was ever at in my life.
The power of that voice. Now, I know that Cornell went through a thing in the early noughties, just before Audioslave, where his live voice just... It seemed to be going, you know? And whatever he did, whatever he did to go and fix that, he came back with twice the voice. Like,
but
he
went down some mad alleys too. Like, he went into kind of dancey stuff and stuff
I think Timberland produced an album
for him.
And that James Bond song is possibly my favourite
Yeah, not me, but it's my top one five favourite James Bond songs.
Yeah.
But it's funny you say that, Gavin, with when they take that musical influence and go with it, it still is very much their own.
Yeah.
And they make it themselves and you're like, wow, this isn't what I know with either Soundgarden or Audioslave, but you listen to it and that's what you, at the, what should I say, the marker of a good musician.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You spoke about Prince, Chris. Mm. Like, all of Prince's albums could, you know, hold their own in different genres at times.
Completely.
Yeah. And they're, like, just unbelievable.
He was a musical chameleon.
Oh, yeah. Man, he was just, and as a guitar player, one of the best Super Bowl shows in history.
Ah, here. Here, hit that the purple rain from the Super Bowl and it pissing rain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it was meant to be nearly.
Oh, yeah. It was meant to be, but
it was a moment.
Have you seen, you know, sure, since we're on about Prince guitar, playing guitar, you've seen him do While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yes.
On the, was it the George Harrison tribute? Yeah, it must have been.
Was that the solo?
The solo. And then at the end, is it playing a class solo? Now, for me, the solo's class, but will you just turn it up a bit there, you know? But at the end of the song, like, he just throws the Telecaster up over his head and it doesn't land, right? Now, clearly someone caught it somewhere, but what just happened there? Like, imagine being...
But him and that guitar at that moment were one.
Ah, they were one. It was similar to what we were talking about Pat McManus earlier. There's, you know, people who are guitarists and then there are people who are actually the guitar.
Yes.
So you're Pat McManus and you're Prince... And a whole host of others, like.
Yeah.
I don't think people appreciate how good Pat is.
Yeah.
Like, I've been fortunate, and I'm sure you guys have seen multiple musicians also, but I feel I've seen a lot of good gigs thanks to the friends and the people I had around me. And my mother and father would have taken me to gigs when I was young because I had an interest in it.
Yeah, great.
But Gavin said to me one evening, Pat McManus is playing in Muldoon's and Drumconra. I said, no way. He said, will you come? I said, right, yeah, let's go. So we were sitting in my uncle's pub. Another uncle of mine was home from America. Gavin came in the middle of us, picked me up. Or I think I actually drove out that time. And we went over and it was just unbelievable. And having seen Kirk Hammett, having seen Slash, and it's... no disrespect to them and they're fabulous guitarists, some of the best guitarists to have ever played, and then you see Pat McManus 5 foot in front of you, not one bum note, whatever way he wants to take it, it's just free flow.
There's, when people ask who do you think the best guitarist is, you know, or the best anything, right, when it comes to musicians, I think the best, it's very hard to judge, but who is the most limitless? Who is the most unlimited? Yes. And what's meant by that is what musician can easily transcribe whatever idea they have in their head through their instrument there and then. And Pat McMahon is just
Pat's an embodiment of that. Yeah, I couldn't get over it when I saw it. I was thinking about that.
I can still remember your face in that pub, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was just like, I never had the pleasure to see Gary Moore, but when he played Parisian Walkways, it was just like, oh man.
Pat's touch, like, off Pat's attitude, Pat's everything. Like, you know, he is the quintessential example of if a young lad or young lassie were like, who do I look up to or who should I? Well, whatever your style of music is, that's your own choice, but maybe how to become one with the instrument, or how to present yourself, or the attitude.
Yeah.
Pat McManus, like.
Pat, for sure.
He's an unsung hero for Ireland, I think.
Definitely.
He's 100%. He's possibly the most, now I haven't seen everyone or anything, but he's possibly the most informed guitar player in the country. Still, you know?
One thing I love about Pat's playing also, and I'm sure that both of you guys can reaffirm this for people out there, it's like, the wonderful drummer Steve Gadd said, you know, fills bring the thrills, but grooves pay the bills. You know, where it's like,
that's class.
The importance of being a rhythm player. Pat is a fabulous rhythm player. Like, he can do it all.
Yeah.
But in the industry where, or not should I say the industry, in the age of social media, where it's how fast you can play, or how technical it looks, Pat can make it feel good.
So there's a saying as well of, you know, I've heard many of times, it took me a while to realise it, but once it clicked, I was like, wow. It's like, don't play the instrument, play the song.
Yeah, serve the music.
Serve the music there, you know, and less is more in many ways. Unless you are that Olympian guitar player or virtuoso. Like, I don't want to go to a Steve Vai show and see less is more, if you know what I mean. I want to see mad shit.
Because that's Steve's thing.
That's Steve's thing,
you got to do your thing.
Yeah,
got to be you.
Yeah. So, like, all your virtuosos there, it's brilliant in that. And Pat is a virtuoso. But more than that, he's a hell of a songwriter, by the way.
Yeah.
He does a lot of original stuff as well. Yeah.
Mama's well,
he's always writing music and coming up with new songs and new albums. But I agree fully with what you're saying there, Luke and Chris. He is you know, I said it earlier, he's someone you should be sort of proud of as an Irish person and a musician.
And he's rubbed shoulders with some of the greatest in the world.
Well, he has, of course, and that's a great achievement, but I mean,
no, individually
his achievement, but he's mastered his instrument and remained very humble and modest about it, whereas a lesser person would maybe not, and he's an overall, we should be proud of Pat McManus as Irish musicians,
for sure. He's definitely the standard.
He's one of the last true from yesteryear, that's still, and he is still bloody doing it. So, you know,
I think you definitely heard it here. Like, get out there. I think it's June 15th, isn't it? The next gig up in
That's what
quick cut.
On that note, we are going to give away two tickets to When Ireland Rocked.
Cool. Can we enter?
Absolutely.
Because I might, like, that gig will probably sell out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could make a few quid on the second-hand market there. Ticketmaster, that shit up, you know?
Definitely. If anyone's listening, get up there and check the boys out up in Drogheda on June 15th. Yeah. And like Luke said, we will be doing a draw shortly and we'll have more details.
Stay tuned for some more details
but
on that.
But just going back quickly to that, like, look, you're up on stage with Cormac as well, who has a hell of a singer. I think he toured with AC/DC, didn't he, with The Answer? Is that right?
Yeah, the only time I seen The Answer was supporting AC/DC. I don't mean that in a bad way. The boys have been busy, but I don't get to many gigs as such.
Yeah.
But I just remember at the time, there was big thing about it in the press that AC/DC are finally doing a world tour again, and they have handpicked a band from Northern Ireland to support them all around the world.
Yeah.
So that in itself was headlines.
I got to see them in New Jersey, actually. The Answer, they opened for AC/DC in the indoor show.
Indoor?
Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah.
The day I seen them, it was pissing rain in Punchestown.
I was at that gig myself.
I seen them in Giant Stadium as well, actually.
I still have the tie.
Hey, come on, Gavin.
I still have the tie, that was my keepsake from that gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so my memory of that was of Cormac. Like the music was great. And this front man who had the pipes, but I think he was rocking a white shirt and the golden locks and all that. Like, he looked the part. And
Robert Plant looking like.
Robert Plant, it's funny you mention it, because when we got into Ireland Rocked and we had Cormac, and whatever reason, I was doing a bit of Googling or something, it could have been for a bit of research. I don't think it was right, who's this bastard, whatever. But like at the time, at the time, it wasn't just that. at the time, it wasn't just AC/DC custom picked them out of thin air.
Yeah.
What I read was like The Answer were obviously doing their thing in London, playing this club and that club. And I think it was even Robert Plant and Mick Jagger had to go and see this new lad on the scene, like, you know. Yeah, but the band, but as well as that, this vocalist, like, you know. And my God, we've spoken about When Ireland Rocked, we've spoken about Pat, but we're blessed to have Cormac, not just his vocal, but his commitment and his attitude.
Yeah.
And like, we all knew, I knew Brendan, I knew Pat, I knew Jimmy, our drummer. So we're only getting to know Cormac, and each time we're with Cormac, it's just another level of soundness, you know.
And where do you think that project's going to go? I know you have another gig in June. is there anything in the pipelines? Like, are you going to try and bring it to bigger venues, or what is the plan?
Well, the plan is to try and utilise any availability that we have between us during the rest of this year, which isn't that much.
Yeah.
And then we're really sort of focusing on, like, January and February as a time to tour that.
Right.
And that's probably be the main agenda going forward, to utilise those months for When Ireland Rocked.
And we're looking to bring it into theatres, not very because good. Everyone wants to play theatres or anything, but we have, like, we have video content for the screens during each one. Like, wasn't all ready to fly in McHugh's for the first gig, but it's going to be, as well as an audio show, the visuals will be a big part of it as well.
So will that be something like Beyond the Music, that scale of stuff, bringing that too?
Yeah, bringing that level of production, just without the orchestra element.
Yeah, it also...
You can always ring Hans Zimmer.
I don't want to bother him. He already did me a few favours.
Yeah, Hans, if you're out there, you know, Chris is looking for you again. We'll give you a shout.
We'll fill your diary for you.
Yeah.
Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure. But before we go, I would like to ask both of you, what is that sound to you? What is that sound when you think of an album, or you think of a bass lick, or you think of a bass sound, Ripsy, when you think of a guitar sound, Chris, what is that sound for you?
I thought this, we were nearly out the door and I was about to say to you, geez, that wasn't too bad, was it? That was all right, wasn't it? And you throw a wobbler like that, wow. Yeah. Okay. You know what, like, nothing comes to immediate mind there.
Say that, like, what do you mean? Like, do you mean what brings you back to a certain memory, or what?
What sound is preferable for you? That's like the holy grail of bass.
Oh man,
the holy grail of guitar. For Chris, sound that you just go, wow, that song or that album. Or
I think I'd be more into songs than any gear or. I don't know what the answer to that question is now.
I'm sorry.
That's a very good one, like, because I'm split between piano and guitar, and that answer. So, from a guitar point of view, like, what's in my head now is the emotion and melody and the playing of the guitar solo in Something, you know, the Beatles.
Mm.
I'm not going to say he's my favourite guitar player, definitely my favourite Beatle, maybe. But George Harrison had a nice touch on the guitar there, which maybe subscribes to my own things that I'm never going to be the fastest guitar player in the world. But you don't have to be to move somebody there.
Exactly.
And then I'm going to go way left field for another sound there. But I'm big into production and pop. And I'd have to go to something like Woman in Chains by Tears for Fears, in terms of how a song can start out. I love a song that starts, you know, it's calm, the waters are calm. Mm. And then the wave builds and builds and builds and builds and washes over you.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the song, it all just plateaus out again. And that'd be an example of my jam there.
That's a good example. Lads, we'll finish up with a few questions, yeah? A few quick fire questions.
Yeah.
Dream venue to play at?
I got we're blessed to play a venue in Paris last year. I'm right in the middle of Paris, Salle Payel. A 2,000 seat venue.
Nice.
And wow, I had to pinch myself on this tour. And after the gig, I don't mind saying, when I went back to the dressing room, I had a few teary minutes.
Wow.
I could not believe, like, looked out the window of my own dressing room into the Paris skyline and that. So, you know, it's nice to play arenas. I'd say it's nice to play arenas, but a smaller gig where you connect with your audience. So a big theatre or a good sweaty club room,
Last one then. If you had the power to get 5 musicians into a room, dead or alive, to record an album, who would they be?
Just pre-warned, there was a couple of questions. You might have a better answer off me. Like, what would be your dream lineup of a band?
Mm. if you could piece together individual musicians and put them together in a band to record an album, don't have to go to the top of the head. What do you think?
I'd have John Mayer on guitar. I'm sorry if that's a great shirt,
You like John Mayer?
I'd probably have Don Henley on vocals. Now, if all these people could leave their attitudes at the door...
Yeah, no, ideal. This is just music only. Yeah.
I'd probably have Billy Joel on the piano and bass. If you could tame Flea a bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. But definitely, it'd be hard to pass Mayer on guitar.
Yeah.
You know, and Don Henley on vocals for me. Yeah.
Good answers, Chris. I can't see Mrs. Better in that name.
Bass wise, Ribs, who?
What do you call the guy from Korn?
I actually don't know.
The bass player?
Bass player. He's class too. I know that's a bit heavier.
Everyone's class. You know, it's really down to what.
But he's a distinctive sound. He done that thing that we talked about earlier about Mario from Gojira. Like, he took that slap bass and that tone to a new level, didn't he? He really did. Like, yeah, he'd be up there with my pick now.
That's the, and a lot of those heavier players, as we call them, they're not just metal players. Like,
No.
We know them because their metal band hit the big time.
Look at Pantera. They were glam rock.
Justin Chancellor out of Tool, another fabulous bass player.
Tool, they're a band who, you know, I'll admit that I haven't done the deep dive on them yet, and I know I'm missing out big time.
Go down the rabbit hole. I know I'm missing
out big time. Oh, yeah. I know I'm missing out big time because what I heard. They came out with a new album 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, Fear Inoculum came out a couple of years back.
I gave that a few spins and was really vibing on it. But at the time, I think, my priority was I had to be up for work at 6 the following morning because it was the pandemic and I had to actually go and work a real job while the music was closed down. God love me. My fingernails. Boys, if I could turn a question back, maybe, who? Let's not go a full band, maybe, but if you were to pick a vocalist. And now, like...
I'd have to go Chris Cornell. I'd have to go Chris Cornell.
And as we were discussing earlier, he could sing many different styles.
Many different songs. That song that he covered a couple of Beatles songs, but he covered Nothing Compares to You.
Oh, yeah. Billie Jean.
That was absolutely fabulous.
He made those songs his own.
I couldn't pass Chris Cornell for a vocalist. Don't know about yourself, Luke.
I'm trying to think here. Really enjoy Phil Lynott as a vocalist.
Good show.
James Hetfield would definitely be one of my favourite vocalists.
I'm boxing myself into the male end of things here now, but is it Ann Wilson from Heart?
I was just about to say Miley Cyrus
would be a good shirt for myself.
Miley. Yeah. Here, start the tape again. Miley. You have to do the female version of this podcast.
I'm going to see Heart in July. I'm really looking forward to it. They're doing a tour of the UK with Squeeze.
Nice.
Got tickets for Christmas.
Unreal.
I really, she's a great singer.
I seen a video from the last 6 months. They're singing Alone at some awards thing or something, and she's still doing it in the original key.
And the ultimate cover of Stairway to Heaven from the
Kennedy Center. Yeah.
That was unreal.
But Jesus, if the guitar player had to give half a shit about the occasion or what he was involved in, I'm sorry, I watched that performance.
Jimmy Page was nearly crying, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, probably because the guitar player couldn't give a shit about being there by the look of him. But anyway, I doubt he's going to hear that.
He might, you never know. But I think...
Lads, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, lads. And again, the boys are playing May 24th, I think. Is that right, Ribsy?
May 24th in the Spirit Store.
Check the boys out.
Light Years,
Pearl Jam. I'll be there. Luke will be there.
We'll be there. We'll be at Rockathon also.
Yeah, we'll be at Rockathon.
The following day.
And check out the boys in June 15th up in McHugh's and Drogheda.
When Ireland rocked. And stay tuned for details for the giveaway of two tickets to that gig.
Check out the boys' socials too with When Ireland Rocked. There's some very good interviews there with Pat McManus. Very, very interesting. I learned a lot from listening to Pat in them few episodes and really enjoyed it. So again, boys, thanks a million for calling.
Thanks. The very best of luck with the podcast.
Best of luck with this.
Best of luck with this.
Thank you.